You are listening to KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, and you are very welcome to Book Lovers Cafe. Book Lovers Cafe is a program of author interviews and book reviews from around the sound and beyond. I'm your host, Chris Wilson. Today, we're going to be talking to Monique Gray Smith. She's an author, an activist, a consultant, and lately, she is so excited to talk to you about her adaptation of Braiding Sweetgrass, Indigenous Wisdom, Scientific Knowledge, and the Teaching of Plants. It is the 2023 Port Townsend Community Read. This book is illustrated by Nicole Neihardt, and it was written by Robin Wall Kimmerer. So, thank you for joining us today, Monique.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Robin Wall Kimmerer, she's from New York or has worked in New York. She's of the Potawatomi tribe, and she's a professor of environmental biology. Mm-hmm. Your background is Cree, Lakota, Scottish, and you live in British Columbia. And then we have, and I think she's an important addition, Nicole Neihardt, who's Navajo Diné, and she now lives in Santa Fe. Tell us a little bit of how you all came together for the Braiding Sweetgrass adaptation for young adults.
Well, thank you for including Nicole Neihardt, because sometimes illustrators get forgotten, and they really do help bring the words to life. So thank you for that acknowledgement of Nicole. Mm-hmm. I first got contacted about 4 years ago now by a friend named Tracy Sorrell, who's also an incredible author in the United States of children's books, saying, I put your name forward for writing the adaptation of Braiding Sweetgrass. And I just laughed because I was like, good luck to whoever wants to try to adapt that for young people. Because it is a sacred text, and when I first read it in 2015, I had to put it down just after the prologue to let all of the wisdom find its rightful place in me again. And then nothing, I heard nothing for a number of years, all through the pandemic, and then a call came from Lerner Publishing to move forward. And my first step was to contact Robin by email and say, I know that, you know, the contract stuff is all unfolding, but I want to have a conversation with you to see if I'm your choice to do the adaptation. So we had this beautiful Zoom visit, and that's how our relationship began. And Nicole and I had already had a relationship because we had worked on a couple children's picture books together. So the three of us, I think, in some ways are like sisters, and in some ways are also like three generations that are bringing this adaptation to a new generation. Yes, it is marketed Braiding Sweetgrass for young adults, but I think it's, you know, for young adults and for young at heart. Because as Robin says, sometimes the original book, Braiding Sweetgrass, was dense and hard for people to find a way in. And Braiding Sweetgrass for young adults has been designed to really access for a variety of ages, hearts, minds, lived experiences, to dive into Indigenous wisdom, scientific knowledge, and the teachings of plants.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I've read both books, and I found both equally wonderful. And I really enjoyed reading this adaptation because I think it really got the important themes and what was really the knowledge that needed to be passed on to a wider audience. So I'm really excited about this book. So the book itself, and let's start for people that have never heard of it before. Why is the title Braiding Sweetgrass significant to the major themes of the book, such as gratitude and reciprocity?
Well, sweetgrass is one of the four sacred medicines, and it is a medicine that grows like grass, quite long, and when it's harvested, it's often braided. And so those strands, those three clumps that are usually have seven strands of grass in each of the three sections, are braided, and they're a very sweet, beautiful-smelling medicine. And when they're lit, they're used to cleanse us and to give us energy. And so those three braids in this book, Breeding Sweetgrass, represent Indigenous wisdom, scientific knowledge, and teaching of the plant. They also, in many teachings, represent kindness, love, and compassion.
Mm-hmm. So we talk about, you know, if you've taken an anthropology class, sometime in one's history, you learn about potlatches and reciprocity, but this is so much more because mm-hmm. it talks about not reciprocity just to people in your clan or your relations, but to the whole earth. Can you talk about part of the book that really emphasizes this teaching?
Well, it's hard to choose a part of mm-hmm. the book because the whole book weaves in that importance of reciprocity with all living beings, which include our non-human relatives. So when we talk about reciprocity, it's that we are in relationship of a giving and a taking and a giving and a taking, and that circle is always flowing. And when we get out of balance in that circle, we are only taking, 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 taking. And that's part of why we see the earth and living beings other than humans, and I think also us included as humans, out of balance.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was thinking about that I'd like to have you do some reading from the book. And there's a section where Robin takes students out to Cranberry Lake to a biological station. And why don't you talk a little bit about that and what the learning is for those students?
Mm-hmm. Thank you. So it is in the section called Braiding Sweetgrass, and the chapter is called Sitting in a Circle. And in Robin's class, as you said, every year she takes students out for 5 weeks away from everything they know.
Can I go?
I know, right? No technology, no nothing. I shouldn't say know nothing, because there's so much. That's, I think, the reciprocalness of this story is that we think that there's nothing, but in it there's so much beauty and learning. So if anybody wants to follow along, I'm going to read from page 205. And the portion of this chapter is called Gratitude and Reciprocity. And so at this point, we're meeting Robin and the students on their last evening before they head home, and they've built a wigwam over the 5 weeks. Claudia asks, "I don't mean this to sound disrespectful. I think it's great to ask the plants if we can take them and give them tobacco. But is that enough? We're taking an awful lot of stuff. We were pretending like we were shopping for cattails, right? But we just took all this stuff without paying for it. When you really think about it, we just shoplifted at the swamp." She's right. If cattails are in the Walmart of the marsh, then the security alarms at the exits would be blaring as our canoes full of stolen merchandise. In a sense, unless we find a way to enter into reciprocity, we are walking away with goods for which we have not paid. I remind them that the gift of tobacco is not a material one, but a spiritual one. A spiritual gift, a means of conveying our highest regard. The students reflect on this as we twine cattail fiber between our fingers. I ask them, what can we possibly offer cattail or birch or spruce? Lance snorts at the idea. They're just plants. It's cool that we can use them, but it's not like we owe them anything. The others groan and then look at me, waiting for a reaction. Chris, a soon-to-be law student, shares, if cattails are free, then they're a gift, and all we owe is gratitude. You don't pay for a gift, you just graciously accept. But Natalie objects, just because it's a gift, does that make you any less beholden? You should always give something back. Whether the plant is a gift or a commodity, you still have incurred an unpaid debt. One moral, the other legal. To act ethically, don't we have to somehow pay the plants for what we received? I love listening to the questions the students consider. They ramble and laugh as we work and come up with a long list of ways that we can give back. This is our work, to discover what we can give. This is an important part of life's journey, to learn the nature of your own gifts and how to use them for good in the world. On the last night of the course, we decide to sleep in our wigwam, hauling our sleeping bags down the trail at dusk and laughing around the campfire until late. Claudia says, I'm sad to leave here tomorrow. I'm going to miss feeling so connected to the land when I'm not sleeping on cattails. It takes real effort to remember that it's not just in a wigwam that the earth gives us everything we need. The exchange of recognition, gratitude, and reciprocity for these gifts is just as important in a Brooklyn flat as under a birch bark roof. When the students start to leave the fire with their flashlights in twos and threes to whisper, I sense a conspiracy. Before I know it, they are lined up with a makeshift song sheet like a choir in the firelight. We have a little something for you, they say, and start a marvelous anthem of their own creation, filled with crazy rhymes of spruce roots and hiking boots, human needs and marshy reeds, cattail torches on our porches. The song crescendos to a rousing chorus of, no matter where I roam, when I'm with plants, I'll be at home. I can't imagine a more perfect gift. With all of us packed into the wigwam, the slow slide to sleep is punctuated by laughs and last moments of conversation. As we eventually drift off, I feel us all held beneath the dome of our bark roof, an echo of the starry dome above. When the sun pours in the eastern door, Natalie wakes first, tiptoes over the others, and steps outside. Through the slits in a cattail, I watch as she raises her arms and speaks her thanks to the new day.
Well,
that's,
I think,
that reading.
Yes, and I think that it can, you can see how this book will appeal to both young adults, and I'm, you know, I have that in quotation marks, kind of high school, early college, but really any reader who is interested in this kind of philosophy. And and so it's really an interesting way in. And I also want to talk about how the scientific knowledge is interwoven with these indigenous beliefs and practices. Because even, you know, when Robin Wall Kimmerer was in graduate school, I believe, and she talked about what she wanted to do and what her thesis was going to be, she was kind of scoffed at. And now she's bringing other students who want to kind of prove that some of these practices are really beneficial. So how did that work? What are some of the examples of that scientific knowledge and indigenous practices?
Oh, they're woven throughout the book.
Mm-hmm.
And Robin gives us examples of her own experience, but she also introduces us to some of her students. For example, she has a student named Laura who begins to study sweetgrass. And initially, as part of her PhD work, and initially the PhD committee says, no, like there's nothing, you can't study plants with no element of spirituality. It's just, there's no data. How are you going to figure this all out? And she feels a bit defeated. And then as the plants begin to support her in her learning, what the basket makers have been telling Laura, she sees about the plants that get harvested, how they thrive. And the plants that don't get harvested, the ones that don't get to share their gift, which is to be harvested and used as medicine, they don't thrive. And so she is, in the end, able to make this, you know, prove this, for lack of a better word, to her PhD committee. And the basket makers are just sitting smiling because they knew all along. But the part of the beauty of this is it also reminds us as humans that we've all come with gifts, our unique way to contribute to the wellness of the world. And when we're not using that gift, when we're not sharing that gift, our ability to thrive is also compromised, just like that sweetgrass was in the research that Laura did and the basket makers did.
Mm-hmm. And then also something that really struck me, I love this, it was near the end of the book, was talking about the Wendigo who kind of comes in the stories of the Wendigo coming and stealing you away, but Wendigo thinking, Oh, my goodness. Can you explain what Wendigo thinking is?
Sure. Wendigo thinking, as I understand it, because I think this is an important piece around braiding sweetgrass for young adults, is that while there are many Indigenous teachings shared in the book, many Indigenous nations have their own teachings. So I'll just share my understanding around Wendigo thinking.
Yes.
And that is around greed, that sometimes our spirits feel and our lives feel empty. And so the Wendigo thinking is, if I can get more, if I can get more, if I can just keep taking and keep adding to my bank account or adding to my closet or adding to my waistline or adding to, you know, my score on a game, whatever it is that I need to keep adding to, is that Wendigo thinking. In some ways, it's sort of like a cycle of addiction. I need more, 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 more. And when we begin to move out of that Wendigo thinking, it's about, how do I use my gifts, just as I said a moment ago, to contribute? Because when I'm using my gifts to contribute, I pretty much always have everything I need. Things will come to me that I need, that I will be taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
And so that Wendigo thinking, we see it in our world, right? We see it with multinational corporations. We see it with the harm that's continuing to be done to the planet. And at some point, there has to be a change in that Wendigo thinking. And the change begins with us.
Yes.
And then it will ripple to our families, to community. Like the fact that Port Townsend is using Braiding Sweetgrass for Young Adults is their book this year. I mean, the implications and the conversations that will unfold in community, that just, it moves me to tears, actually, because that's where the change happens.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the lever of change happens.
Mm-hmm.
And when we think about the young people reading this book, who will be in 20 years, 30 years, the decision makers, they will be making decisions with a different heart, mind, and spirit, and perhaps values as part of that, than perhaps some of the current decision makers in our world. And to me, that's really exciting.
In the book, there is a quote that's highlighted in a circle of braided grass, and it says, "It is the Wendigo way that tricks us into believing that belongings will fill our mm-hmm. hunger when it is belonging that mm-hmm. we crave." Yes, social connections, reciprocity, gratitude for what's around us. Beautiful. So thank you.
And time in the forest. I mean, where you all live mm-hmm. in Port Townsend, you live in such a beautiful part of the world. Like for me, where I live, I'm a block from the forest, a similar forest here on the Kwangin and Wasanich lands as you have there in Port Townsend. And when I go into that forest, I feel like I belong. So yes, we can have a sense of belonging with our human relatives, but we can also have it with our non-human relatives. Going to the ocean or the forest can be medicine for us.
You are listening to KPTZ 91.9 FM right here in Port Townsend. And today we are talking to Monique Gray Smith. She is the author who has adapted Braiding Sweetgrass by Robin Wall Kimmerer for young adults and anyone who wants to read this book. So let's talk about you, Monique. You are also an author, and you started out as a psychiatric nurse. Tell us a little bit about your pathway to writing stories for children and others.
I was working, as you said, as a psychiatric nurse in acute psych in my hometown of Kamloops. And I was dismayed with the health system. So I applied to the School of Social Work in Victoria. And when I came down for an interview, there was five women sitting behind the interview table, and I was overwhelmed by that. And part of the application process was I had to write a personal statement about why I wanted to be a social worker. And when I was leaving that interview, I had my hand on the door, and one of those women said, "I look forward to reading your book one day." Mm-hmm. And I really didn't think she was talking to me. At that point, I was 6 months sober. I hadn't graduated from high school, even though I'd gone back to get my grade 12. So I had a lot of self-limiting beliefs. And I was leaving, and she said, "No, wait, Monique, I'm talking to you. I look forward to reading your book one day." And that was in 1991. And it wasn't until 2013 that my first book came out. It took a long time for me to begin to believe that I had the potential. And the other piece was I kept asking myself, who am I to write a book? And the questions we ask ourselves is so important. And about 2011, I started to ask myself a different question, and that was, what would I write about? And then I knew the answer started to come. That part of it was my story, and more explicitly, the history of Indigenous people in Canada woven into story.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how the journey began.
So there's one book called Tilly, A Story of Hope and Resilience, and that's kind of about you and your path.
Yes, it's creative nonfiction.
Yes, and then followed by Tilly and the Crazy Eights. I love this. Which, is this a true story of a real trip of a bucket list to make your way to the powwow in Albuquerque?
Well, it's a combination. When I was writing Tilly, these elders kept coming. And there's a couple of them that are in Tilly and the Crazy Eights, but they kept coming. And so I knew halfway through writing Tilly that I was going to write Tilly and the Crazy Eights. And my best friend and I, we actually did the road trip. And so, and she's the most creative person I know. Her name's Kelly Trebasket. And we had all kinds of things unfold on the trip that show up in the book in different ways. So it's a combination of us actually doing the trip and these elders who would visit me and just have their own stories. And sometimes, you know, for me, when I'm writing, it is like I get transported. And there are some elements of Tilly and the Crazy characters tell that I did not have in the outline. That it was like, they were like, no, this part of our experience and story must be told.
Uh-huh. And then you've written these wonderful early childhood books. Just the titles can kind of give a sense of what they're all about. My Heart Fills with Happiness is a baby board book. And When We Are Kind is a picture book. I Hope and You Hold Me Up. So tell me about what inspired these stories.
My Heart Fills with Happiness was inspired. I was doing some work with Aboriginal Head Start, our cultural preschools here, modeled by Head Start from the States. And I was doing work with the parents and grandparents and staff. And at lunch, the children joined us. But there was one little guy, you know, 33-year-olds came in the room, but there was one little guy whose temperament was a little bit different. And he stood by the door looking around for his person. And he locked eyes on his cookum, grandma in my language. And he ran right over to her, and she took his face in her hands, and she looked at him with so much love. His whole body changed, and what I saw was his heart filled with happiness. And it made me wonder, like, what fills my heart with happiness? And I thought about it on my ferry ride home and then off and on for a couple weeks. And then one day I was in a meeting, and the whole book came. And not a single word's been changed, and it's illustrated by the incredible Julie Flett, who really brings the book to life with her incredible illustrations.
I'll tell you something.
And published by Orca Book.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you something a little personal, is that I once taught preschool and kindergarten on the Yukon River, and I wish I had your books when I was there many, many years ago. And I'm sure, you know, these are published in multilingual and different languages, and they must be so wonderful to have in Indigenous classrooms, and they're really for everybody as well. So congratulations.
Yeah, I think it's actually equally as important that they're in classrooms where the majority is non-Indigenous students.
Uh-huh, yes.
Because it helps all learners understand different lived experiences.
Yes, it's so key. So what do you see is coming for you in the future, Monique? Where do you want to go with your writing and your speaking?
Oh, well, thank you for asking that question. I've been thinking about that a lot, so it's interesting that you asked that. I've been thinking more and more about talking about the importance of belonging, just as you referenced earlier, Chris, the importance of our relations to all living beings and how the land and the water and animals can help each of us heal and to feel stronger and be in that relationship of reciprocity, of give and take. I've been thinking about, because I'm in a new phase of life, my children are 19 and in college, about what does it mean for me now? And thinking about writing children's books, I have another one coming called Circle of Love with Nicole Neidhart and HarperCollins in New York, and Heart Drum, about love is love, about how we love all forms of beings and two-spirited LGBTQIA squared, and another children's book called Dreaming Alongside, about helping children realize that their dreams can be while they sleep, but also while they're awake, and how our dreams can give us energy and fortitude and hope. And I think, you know, your question is really apropos in this time that we are, you know, in early March, about what do each of us hope for the year ahead, about our dreams for the year ahead, and to begin to speak those. Because what we put out, you know, it is that gift of reciprocity when we speak words, when we speak kindness and hope about our own lives, but also for others. Like that woman at UVic who said to me, I look forward to reading your book one day. She spoke my future. And then it was about me to put the steps in place to make that future a reality. So I hope I'm working on a novel, another adult novel that is like nothing at all I've ever written. And it is so much fun.
So brave. Congratulations.
It's so much fun. Well, thank you.
So that is really a lot to look forward to. And it's really been a delight to talk to you today, Monique. Today we are talking to Monique Gray Smith, and she is the author of the adapted version of Braiding Sweetgrass by Robin Wall Kimmerer for young adults. Please join me next time to talk more about books and authors. I'm your host, Chris Wilson. You can listen to past shows and other programs from the podcast page on the website at kptz.org. And you can make a donation to the station there as well. Thank you to the engineer and editor, Taylor Clark, and Carl Allen, and Nora Petrich, and to all the volunteers and supporters who make this wonderful radio station possible. We'll see you next time.
Today's closing music, by request of our guest, it's Buffy St. Marie's Skywalk. Older.